Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is Perek Vav of Sefer Hosea, the sixth chapter of the book of Hosea. And in this chapter, we will see that even when people think of themselves as setting their minds towards tshuva and towards returning to Hashem, that will not necessarily automatically gain them what they seek, which is, I think, in some ways almost as scary or troublesome a view as many other things, many of the other punishments that we've seen predicted in the books of Nevi'im that we've seen together. So in Pasuk Aleph, the Pasuk says, "L'chuv v'nashuv el Hashem ki hu taref v'yirpa'inu yach v'yach b'sheinu." It envisions the Jewish people as saying, "Let's return to Hashem. He is the one who attacked us, who punished us, and He is the one. Hashem is the one who can give us back." Who can heal us from what we've done? Yach v'yach b'sheinu, He has struck us, and He will bind up our wounds. Yichayenu yimi yomayim b'yom hashlishi yikimenu v'nichya lefanav. He will bring us back to life after 2 days, and on the third day He will bring us up, make us rise up, and we will live before Him. Now Rashi understands yichayenu mi yomayim as meaning that Hashem will heal us or reawaken us or let us resuscitate us, revive us from the two Batei Mikdash that have been destroyed. And on the third day, Rashi takes to mean on the day of the building of the third Batei Mikdash. The Radak just thinks it's simpler, it's just a metaphor for 2 days of troubles, of sin, of illness, of hard times, and on the third day it'll be better. But he quotes the Ibn Ezra, who says that it's the two Galiot like Rashi, so that it's not Rashi in a Midrashic mode, because the Ibn Ezra is much more of a Pashtan, much more seeking for a literal meaning, except that the Radak thinks that there, the Mitzrayim and Bavel were two Galiot, and this Bayom HaShlishi is from the third day of the illness that got so serious Hashem, and that got so terrible Hashem will revive us. I would just point out, there's an interesting Gemara in Sanhedrin, and it's perhaps, I think, well known that the Gemara in Sanhedrin suggests there are going to be 6,000 years of this world, of this existence, and then 1,000 years of something else where the world will be desolate. It's a whole hard discussion and complicated set of agadotaot, of more mythical, legendary, whatever the right word would be, envisionments of the future. But that's the one that's very well known, and therefore there have been people who have said, you know, if we count our calendar, 5,700 and whatever number of years it is right now, 768 years. So there are people who have said, oh, Mashiach certainly has to come within the next 232 years, because there's only 6,000 years of Yalmo. So whether that's drawn out is a hard question, and there have been also discussion of that. I just point out that in that same Gemara, Abaye says that after the 6,000 years, the world's going to be destroyed for 2,000 years, not for 1,000 years, because it says Yechayenu mi yomayim, that Hashem will revive us from 2 days, and in that Gemara, a day is 1,000 years, because that's the length of a day, because the Pasuk says Ki Hashem Yinecha Ki Yomim Bol, that 1,000 years of our time is like, in some way, a day of Hashem's time, whatever that would tend to mean. So that would then mean that after the 6,000 years, there's 2,000 years coming in which you still might not get the full revival that we're talking about here in these psukim. So that would just be an interesting perspective on how far and how long the future of Jewish history can take, especially for those of us who identify with the state of Israel and see it as the beginning of a process. The possibility, according to Abaye, that process might last for another 2,000 years is a startling one. Pasuk Bet, Yechayenu miyom, I'm sorry, Pasuk Gimel, V'neida'a nirdefa ladat at Hashem keshachar nachon motza'o v'yavo chageshem lanu kemalkosh Yore Aretz, and let us neda know, and let us run near defa to know Hashem, to understand Hashem fully. So interestingly, the JPS English has it as let us pursue obedience to the Lord. Neda near defa ladat Hashem, to know Hashem. They have it as we shall become obedient to Hashem, which is an interesting interpretation, because it means that they're assuming that knowledge of God is identical to obedience to God. The Radak, in contrast, takes Veneda Nirdefa more in terms of that we should know, and we should run to develop this greater knowledge. And so he says on Veneda, Neda will mean to appreciate how valuable it is to know Hashem, and that means lasod mishpat tzedakah, to do, as we've seen before, righteousness and charity and justice and all those things, and that is a way of coming to know God, is doing all those things, being careful about all those things, because the pasuk says, "Halo hi hadat otinu Hashem." That is what knowing Hashem is. Then he goes, his father is saying, the neda means, you have to know Hashem. Is that we have to have some knowledge of Hashem before we can serve Hashem. So that is something to remember, right? That there is in many circles the idea that if you just feel like you love Hashem and you feel like you're serving Hashem, and this is in Jewish and non-Jewish circles, well, that's good enough. And what the father of the Radak is saying is that it's not that way. That Veneda Nirdefa is telling you that in order to really run to Hashem in the proper way, with the real knowledge of what it means to serve Hashem, you have to have some knowledge. The Ibn Ezra is very similar in that the Ibn Ezra says that you can't know Hashem until you've learned many different forms of wisdom, and they're like a ladder to go up this ladder to know Hashem. And then that's why at the end of the pasuk he says, "Kishachar nachon mitzmotzao." The Ibn Ezra says that you know Hashem originally by his actions, by his attributes, which is like the shachar, like the morning. The morning sun will give you some knowledge of Hashem, and then you'll go from there and you'll build up in your knowledge. V'yachavocha geshen lan, it'll rain down on you. Kemalkosh yore eretz. So malkosh is the late rains that come to water the world and to make the ground and to moisten the ground even at the end of the harvest season. So that in the Ibn Ezra, what we're saying is that this pasuk is telling you that there's some idea of having to begin a process in which you have to learn many, many areas of knowledge, and that you only begin with watching the world as Hashem runs it and learning from that. The Rambam seems to have felt that that was the most we can do. The Ibn Ezra, that's the beginning, and then you learn more and more in sciences and wisdoms and forms of knowledge, and then you come to greater and greater knowledge of Hashem. So this pasuk is saying, these three pasukim together would seem to be saying that the people understand they have to return to Hashem, and they're returning to Hashem in the hope that Hashem will heal them, and they understand that the returning to Hashem involves having to serve Hashem fully, having come to know Hashem. It's not just a question of, well, I feel like I want to do tshuva. It involves much more than that, much more labor, much more work than that. The only piece to add is the Gemara that I would add. The Gemara in Brachos Vav Amud Bei says that when you leave shul, you're not allowed to run. You're not allowed to walk quickly because it looks like you're just enjoying leaving shul too much. And Abaye adds, that's only to leave. But to go to shul, it's a mitzvah to run. Shenemar v'nir defaladat as Hashem. So Abaye is assuming, first, that shul is a place where you get knowledge of Hashem. And if that's not true, then Abaye's whole limud goes away, is irrelevant, and is unimportant, and therefore does not to be... I mean, in situations where... That's what I really mean to say. In situations where Abaye's... point about shul is not valid of the shul that you're talking about, and there would be no deep value in running to that shul. It's shuls that create, through davening, through whatever happens there, greater knowledge of Hashem. So there, you're supposed to be, it's ideal to run towards them, to display an excitement about it. So that's the first three psukim. That's the claim of the Jewish people. That's their position in this nevuah. Sounds pretty good. So the problem is that Hashem sees through it. In Pasuk Dalet, Hashem says, "Ma'aseh lecha Ephraim, ma'aseh lecha Yehuda, v'chastechem kan an boker v'chatal mashkim holech." Hashem says, "What am I going to do for you, Ephraim and Yehuda? Your chesed, all your kindnesses, all your goodness are like the morning clouds and like the dew, which leaves so quickly." The question is, in what way is it like a cloud or like the dew? So Rashi thinks it's like a cloud or dew, that it's lacking in substance completely. And that's the way he reads it. But the Radak says, no, it's not that it's lacking substance completely, it's that it's inconsistent. You'll do it for a little bit, but then you'll quickly go back. And he gives examples, right? So Yehu was a king of the northern kingdom who did good for a while, and then he went and he did evil, and so too with the kings of the southern kingdom. Once they became evil, so they too would briefly return and briefly do tshuva, and then they would turn away from Hashem. So the Hashem says, what am I going to do for you? So in Rashi's reading, it's that what you've done in terms of chesed is insubstantial, and insubstantial here doesn't have to mean that there's no value to it whatsoever. It could just mean that compared to the evils that you've done, it's not substantial enough to justify any deep change in Hashem's perspective of us and of what's going on with us. So if that's what it is, then that shows you that there comes a point at which your tshuva has to have a certain standard, has to achieve a certain standard, otherwise it's not acceptable. So that would be one way of reading it. And then the Radak's way of reading it would be that while we, you know, we have this problem, I think I have this problem anyway, many Yom Kippurs, you come back and you meant the tshuva that you said the previous year, and then when you review this year, many of those sins come back to haunt you because that's the way human beings are. So the question is, what happens with that? Does Hashem just say, well, you get a free pass, okay, fine, you didn't do it, you didn't succeed, but free pass, you do tshuva again, and it's fine. Could be. But here, at least at a national level, for the northern kingdoms and southern kingdoms, who had hundreds of years of doing the same things over and over again, Hashem has to be saying, you need more than that according to Radak, and your inconsistency is a problem. Pasuk Hei, Akein Chatzavti Banevi'im Haragtim Be'im Refi Mishpatecha Or Yetzei. So because of this, because of your failures and your lack of real tshuva, or your failure to be consistent about tshuva, I had to deal with my Nevi'im. So Chatzavti Banevi'im Hamragtim means literally, it means I've hewn them down. Lechsov is to cut them down in some way, or to dig them out, and then to kill them with my word, and umishpatecha or yetzei, and then your judgment is going to be brought out by the light, or in the light of day. So Rashi reads it as that I chatzavti b'neviim. Is I put my words onto the Nevi'im, which is a burden for them, but then they themselves didn't follow them. So Rashi seems to think we're talking about Nevi'im who fail to even themselves keep to the standards that Hashem is telling them. And then, so Hashem kills them, and then he says, and how could I not bring justice to you? These were my Nevi'im, and I had to kill them. So it's not clear if Rashi means that these are Nevi'i Sheker or not. It's not so clear, but the Radak is clearer about it. He says, because you aren't consistent, I have to tire out my Nevi'im by daily giving them messages to you, and you don't listen to them. And then from my tiring them out so much, by sending them so often, it's as if I kill them. And I do it, and I've done it, so that your justice or yetzei could be clear of the light of day. Clear of the light of day, meaning that by the time you get punished, it's supposed to be true that you've heard so much from the Nevi'im about what you're doing wrong, that you will then come to realize why you're getting these punishments. So I find that Radak stimulating in a couple of ways. First, the whole reference to daily having Nevuot is interesting because we are in Treyasar, but even the Book of Yeshayahu, which is a fairly long Sefer and has what we call 66 Prakim, Book of Yirmiyahu was a fairly long Sefer, the Book of Yechezkel, a little bit shorter, but also a fairly long Sefer. But by no means, no stretch of the imagination, are those books a record of day-by-day Nevuot. They're a record of some of, we might call, the greatest hits of the Nevuot that they had over their, Yirmiyahu has a 40-year career, and Yeshayahu, I think, also has a 40-year career. So if they have these long careers, we have 60, 70 Nevuot, it means 2, 3, 5 a year. So the fact that Radak assumes that these Nevi'im were giving Nevuot daily shows us that what we have in Navi is the most essential of their Nevuot, but there were Nevuot going on, and the people, I think, in two different things could be happening. One is they might have just learned to ignore them. It becomes noise, and therefore they don't pay proper attention. And that's not a good thing. I'm not saying that's right. I'm not saying it's understandable on the people's part. I'm saying maybe that's what happened, but the people are at fault for having allowed that to happen. And the other aspect is that they're able to, that it's not that they turned away from one or two lectures a year. They didn't have to attend that, you know, the Navi announced the Nevuah, and they didn't go to the auditorium. It's every day, and they're not changing, and they're not accepting the admonishment that's being given to them. So that's I think it's a scary prospect. It's particularly scary in this context because we're now talking about people who in some way, in some sense, have said, no, we have to return to Hashem, and yet they don't return, and they're hearing the Nevi'im every single day, and these Nevi'im are, as it were, getting killed. And the Radak quotes his father, who says, no, that some of them actually did get killed in the Nevuah, in the doing their shlichut, doing their messenger for Hashem. There's Zechariah and there's Uriah, two Nevi'im we have a tradition, who were actually killed by some of the people they were sent to. So that being a Navi was not a guarantee of either a good life, certainly wasn't a guarantee of that, but not only of a good life, it wasn't even a guarantee of actual life, because you could end up getting killed for your Nevuot. And that's what Hashem was complaining about. Right? That's what Hashem is complaining about. And that's what's going on here, and that's part of why Hashem is saying, I'm not going to accept your tshuva just as it's said. Pasuk Vav, ki chesed chafatzti v'lo zavach v'dat elokim me'olot. because what I want is chesed, kindness. I want you, and remember that kindness has to be built on a foundation of truth. Kindness isn't just you're nice to people. It has to be built on a foundation of a deep understanding of truth and doing what's right and just first, and then moving on to chesed, moving on to kindness by understanding where the rules of justice can be extended to achieve even a better result than the result of justice. So that's what Hashem says, and Hashem says that's preferable. I want that more than I want sacrifices. So that reference suggests that when the people said in Hosea's recording of it that they wanted to do tshuva, they were focused on the idea of tshuva. Let's have a big ritual, a big ceremony. We'll go, you know, perhaps to the Beit HaMikdash, right? And so the Radak says that, right? They go back to the Beit HaMikdash. The time of Hosea ben Elah, he takes away those watchmen who are guarding the roads to stop them from going to the Beit HaMikdash, so they could go to the Beit HaMikdash. We've seen in earlier Nevuot, in earlier prophets, that they don't even go to the Beit HaMikdash, and that's why that's one of the reasons they're punished. And then aside from that, they don't have chesed and da'at. So Yoshiyahu destroys the Bamot, but they don't get around doing chesed into reforming their ways in those kinds of things. And these are the kinds of comments by Nevi'im that bother me deeply, because let me just do Pasuk Zion. V'heimaka Adam Avru Vrit Sham Bagadubi. They, all of them, have transgressed the covenant, and they've turned traitor towards me, and they're doing things towards each other as well. And the reason why I find it so problematic or so distressing is that what the Navi is pointing out is that it's a huge deal to get the people to realize they need to do tshuva in any way or shape or form, right? So let's say the idea that they have to reject Bamot. Bamot is a lasting problem in the southern kingdom, at least, and then the idol worship is a lasting problem in the northern kingdom. These are deep and well-entrenched views of the people. And they get rid of them finally, or to some extent, or at some point, for some period of time, they get rid of it. And the response by Nevi'im is almost, so what? That's not even what I cared about that much, because Hashem doesn't care all that much about getting the olot in the right place. Hashem cares in the context of Hashem doesn't want the sacrifice being sent to other places or other gods. Certainly that's true. But the production of proper sacrifice, while a part of Torah, is not the essence of Torah, is not the key, not the crucial part of Torah, as we've seen in Hosea and on the Nevi'im. Right? That's what Hashem is saying right here too. Ki chesed chafasti velo zavach. And it's better to know Hashem. Now, it's not that you don't have to do olot at all. It's that you have to understand the emphases, where they fit. So olot and korbanot and sacrifices, they're a part of a system. They're a cog in the machine. Right? So that cog certainly is vital, and you can't have a fully functioning machine without the cog. But if the point of the machine is to drive a car, right, and let's say sacrifices are a piece that makes sure you can have air conditioning in the car. So, if you live in a desert and air conditioning is really very important for a car, the car is not fully functioning without the sacrifice, without that machine working. But the car as a whole, if it doesn't have a motor, is certainly lacking much more, and that's what's going on here as well, and that's part of the issue of, you know, people, and I think this is something that's easily applicable to people today, where you watch them and you see them and you learn some Torah and you see what the Torah cares about, you see what Chazal care about, you see what Nevi'im care about. And then you watch people and what they care about and how what they value and what they define as real religiosity or important religiosity. And the contrast is striking. And here's an example of that in this Navi where he's saying exactly that. He's saying, you focused on Zevach. You focused on certain rituals. That's not what it is. And now he goes on in Pasuk Chet to show you what we mean. Gilad Kiryat Poale Avin Akuba Midam. Gilad is a place of people who commit sins, and it's drenched with blood. So the drench with blood was taken by the Gemara, literally, it was taken by the Gemara to explain why it is that there were three Ari Miklat on the other side of the Jordan, on the what we would call the east side of the Jordan, when there were only 2.5 tribes there, but there were 3 Ari Miklat. So why should that be? When on the whole other side, when there were 9.5 tribes, there were only 3 Ari Miklat, 3 cities of refuge. And cities of refuge are places that have accidental murders, right? The man commits murder or kills somebody else and it's not fully in his control. It wasn't fully out of his control either. He had some liability, but not full premeditated liability or on purpose liability. So he runs to near Miklat and he has to stay there in the whole procedure that goes on. Gemara says, I don't understand. There are only 2.5 tribes and 9.5 tribes. Why are there equal numbers of cities of refuge on either side of the Jordan? Gemara quotes our pasuk, Gilad, Kiryat Po'le'avin, Akubam Idam, that it is so full of people who do evil, and so full of blood, you needed more Arei Miklat. You needed more cities of refuge. The Ramban on the on Torah, in his commentary on the Torah, in Bamidbar, says, I don't understand. The Arei Miklat only for those who do it accidentally, without full understanding. So how could Akubam Idam, how could the fact that it's a place full of blood affect the Arei Miklat, affect the cities of refuge at all? Those kinds of murderers can't get there anyway. So he says, yeah, but they fake it to get there, and they trick people, and they manage to get there. That would be one possibility. The other possibility I think I've seen somewhere would be that no, but that the more regular murder you have, it's also going to be true the more accidental murder you have, and that the two statistics tend to go together, and that if it's a place where respect for human life is low, then it'll happen in accidental terms as much as it'll happen in purposeful and murderous terms. So that's in our context, in our perek, the pasuk jumps out at you because it started off with people who were saying, oh, we have to go back to Hashem, and maybe Hashem will heal us, and we have to run to know Hashem. And running to know Hashem in the Gemara's picture was you run to shul. So, and I'm not saying you don't, but you run to shul at the same time as you're a murderer. Right? And pasuk tet, uch chake ish gidudim, chever kohanim, derech yiratzchu shechma, ki zima asu. It's that it's like the groups of Kohanim, the Kohanim who are serving in the Beit HaMikdash, where the Kohanim were trying to teach Torah and are supposed to be teaching Torah. So these Kohanim, so the Radak thinks the Kohanim have Bamot, that it's not the real Kohanim who are in the Beit HaMikdash, the Kohanim who are serving at the Bamot at these alternate altars that are not supposed to be there, and they're like bandits and they stand by the side of the road trying to drag people in to pay the money to offer sacrifices. Right? Rashi seems to think that it's more literal than that. They actually, some of these Kohanim actually committed murder because they needed the money or they wanted the money and they committed the murder. So in the Radak way, they're not committing actual murder, but they're taking money that really doesn't belong to them and they're doing all sorts of wrong things. Kizima asu, because they do terrible things. So the Radak thinks kizima asu means any kind of wrong action and wrong thought. They do all these kinds of things. Pasuk Yud Bevet Yisrael Reiti Sha'aruria Sham Zenut LeEfrayim Din Mali Yisrael. I've seen terrible things. So here in the Northern Kingdom, the Radak thinks it's a reference to those calves that were set up by Yeravam and that remain, and that's what the evil is. But you obviously could take it more literally. They just do terrible things there, including sexual immorality. Gam Yuda Shat Katsir Lach Beshuvi Shivut Ami. So Gam Yuda, Rashi says, they too have gone off the right path. They too have fallen off of their paths of righteousness. And therefore, Shat Katsir Lach, Rashi says, there's going to come a time when they're going to have to go into exile. And then, Bishuvi Shivut Ami, when I, Rashi says, when I rebuke them and admonish them to teach them the right way. And then Shivut Ami means not, Bishuvi Shivut Ami doesn't mean when I return them. It means Shivut Ami means they're wandering. Lashon Mishuvan Arut V'Yoldut, that they wander off of the right path. And when I try to bring them back to the right path by disciplining them and punishing them, that will be when all of this will be sort of rectified. So that the Perek, and we'll see more of this in the next parak of Hashem talking about how it's going to be turned around and brought back to the right way. But what the parak shows is, what the chapter shows is, that even the commitment to improving, even if it might think of itself as sincere, isn't necessarily going to be aware of or come into full awareness of that which needs to be changed, that which needs to be rectified. And therefore, you might have a situation, as you seem to in this chapter, you might have a situation where people are saying that they want to return to Hashem, that they intend to return to Hashem, and yet the return that they are promoting and that they are looking out for misses the point, if not entirely, but largely and significantly, and that would be a challenge that the people of Hosea's time were facing. And I think it's easily plausible to apply that and to understand that and to see why this would make it into Tanakh as a chapter that applies not only in their time, but applies the Dori Dori for all generations and challenges us with how we are going to return to Hashem. Have a great day.